Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Mr. Tom Skinner. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you all for joining us today for this update on flu activity in the U.S., as well as some information on an MMWR that we've put out on vaccine effectiveness. With us today is the Director of the CDC, Dr. Tom Frieden, as well as a medical epidemiologist from our influenza division, Dr. Joe Brzee. Dr. Frieden is going to give some opening remarks of maybe 5 to 7 minutes in length, and then we'll get to your questions. Dr. Frieden may have to drop off the call at some point during the Q&A, and then we'll have Dr. Brzee to stand by and answer additional questions. With that, Dr. Frieden.
Thank you very much for joining us. Today, what I'd like to do is give an update on what's going on with flu. I know that there's a great deal of interest in how this year's flu season is unfolding. And as we always do at CDC, we want to give you information as we get it so that we can put the appropriate perspective on this year's flu season. The bottom line, it's flu season. Most of the country is seeing or has seen a lot of flu, and this may continue for a number of weeks. There are three things that I want to cover this morning. First, an update on the level of activity. Second, an overview of data that we're releasing about the effectiveness of this year's flu vaccine. And third, steps that everyone can take to protect themselves. I'll also invite Dr. Joseph Brzee to join me in answering your questions. So as we said in early December, the season got off to an earlier start than usual, about a month or so ahead of what we normally see. We're continuing to see influenza activity remaining elevated in most of the U.S. It may be decreasing in some areas, but that's hard to predict because particularly when you have data from over the holiday season, trends may be a little hard to predict. Declines may be because the disease level has peaked in some areas and is coming down, or next week we may see that go up again. But we are seeing a decrease in the most recent week in some areas, while other parts of the country, particularly in the West, appear to continue to be on the upswing since they experienced the flu this season more recently, later in the season. This really is not surprising. Influenza activity ebbs and flows during flu season and tends to spread across the country. It also has some variability even within states and communities. So just because it's widespread in one city or state doesn't mean it will be throughout that area. As you know, for the past 8 years or so, we've monitored recognized child or pediatric deaths from influenza. There are two more influenza-associated pediatric deaths reported in the past week. That brings the total to 20 deaths this season. We also look at outpatient monitoring or surveillance for influenza-like illness, and that fell in this week to 4.3% from 6%. That's above the baseline of 2%, but down from last week. And again, that's the trend which really only the next week or two will show whether we have, in fact, crossed the peak or whether we'll see a resumption of the increase in the next week or two. Because of the holiday season, again, trends are harder to predict. 24 states and New York City are now reporting a high level of influenza-like illness activity. That's a decrease. That's down from 29 states before, and 16 are reporting moderate levels of ILI activity, up from 9. A third, exactly 33% of strains were positive for influenza. That's down. And in terms of the pneumonia and influenza mortality system, the proportion of deaths attributed to pneumonia and influenza rose to slightly above the threshold for the first time this season. We usually see a several-week lag from the time that illness starts to rise to the time that the deaths start to rise. So this is in line with what we would expect. 47 states report widespread geographic influenza activity. That's up from 41 last week. Nationally, it's likely that influenza will continue for several more weeks. During the past decade, we've seen an average of about 12 consecutive weeks, 3 months, of the ILI being elevated. But as we often say, the only thing predictable about flu is that it's unpredictable. Only time will tell us how long our season will last and how moderate or how severe this season will be in the end. That's the update on our activity. I'll go through vaccine effectiveness and steps people can take to protect themselves, and then we'll take questions. Each year since 2004 and 2005, CDC has estimated the effectiveness of the seasonal influenza vaccine. We look at how likely that vaccine is to keep you out of the doctor's office. We've also looked at how likely it is to prevent people from being hospitalized or to dying from the flu, and those numbers tend to be similar or perhaps a little more effective at preventing hospitalization or death. With the early onset of this year's flu season, we can provide earlier information on our best estimate of vaccine effectiveness. We looked at 1,155 children and adults in a flu effectiveness network program. These are people who were seen between December 3rd of last year and January 2nd of this year, and that allowed us to evaluate or estimate the overall effectiveness of the vaccine. Once we look at the differences across study sites and correct for that, but not other factors, we found the overall vaccine effectiveness to be 62%. That means that if you got vaccinated, you were about 60% less likely to get the flu that required you to go to your doctor. So what we've known for a long time is that the flu vaccine is far from perfect, but it's still by far the best tool we have to prevent the flu. Now, there are differences in different groups. In the past, we found, for example, that younger people tend to be better protected by the vaccine than older people, that people who have underlying illness may be less likely to be protected. So those differences have not yet been fully assessed. This is an early estimate, but as I said at the outset, our basic approach at CDC is to get information as quickly as we can and then share it openly and transparently. Finally, there is a lot that you can do to protect yourself against the flu. Vaccination is the single most important step you can take to protect yourself. Again, vaccination is far from perfect, but it's by far the best tool we have to prevent influenza. You can still protect yourself through vaccination. We're hearing of spot shortages of the vaccine, so if you haven't been vaccinated and want to be, better late than never, but call your provider ahead of time. You may have to check in several places to find the vaccine because most of the more than 130 million doses that were produced by vaccine manufacturers this year have already been given. Second, be sure to cover your cough and sneeze and stay home if you're sick with cough and fever. Keep your children home from school if they're sick with cough and fever. This really does help prevent the spread of flu. Washing your hands often is important. It can reduce illness from flu and other things. And if you get sick with a flu-like illness, if you have fever and cough, if you're very ill, or if you have an underlying condition, it's very important that you contact your doctor because early treatment with antivirals, such as Tamiflu, can reduce the severity of illness, can keep you out of the hospital, or prevent even more serious illness. There's, as always, more information available at flu.gov or cdc.gov. Thanks again for joining us, and Dr. Brissy and I will be available to answer your questions.
Shirley, I think we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. At this time, we're ready to begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your line and record your name clearly. To withdraw your request, press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Marion Falco with CNN Medical News Atlanta. You may ask your question.
Good morning, Dr. Fried and Dr. Brzee. So we're now up to 47 states with widespread flu activity. Can you tell me what the threshold is for that, and also in which areas we're still seeing, you mentioned the West, but a little more specificity, where we're seeing things possibly getting a little better and where we're seeing things possibly still getting bad? What are the bad spots right now?
Dr. Brissy?
Sure, happy to. So widespread activity is a definition that we use, and it describes how many geographic areas in a state, within a state, are affected by flu. So widespread means that more than 50% of the geographic subregions in a state, like counties, for instance, are experiencing flu. What we're seeing right now is that there's more widespread states than there were last week, but there's probably fewer states this week that are reporting high levels of ILI. So it gives us hope, at least, that some of the states are starting to get to the peak or a little past peak, especially in the southeastern part of the United States, where the earliest disease was seen during the year.
But where is it getting still bad?
Well, I think you really get flu all over the country right now. If you look at the map, there's widespread disease in most states and high levels of disease in most states. I think the only area of the country that's still relatively unaffected, though they still have lots of flu themselves, is the far west coast. The rest of the country has lots of flu.
Okay. Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Mike Stobey with Associated Press. Let me ask your question.
Good morning. Thanks to you all for taking the question. Two, actually. One, Dr. Frieden, I think, mentioned there might be some spot shortages of vaccine. I was wondering in what parts of the country you've heard reports that there are spot shortages. And the second question, if you could clarify for me something you were saying about the ILI map and how the holidays may have messed up our understanding of what's going on. It would seem like the holiday week would have more doctor's offices closed, and that would diminish the number of reports. I'm not quite clear on how that might skew our current understanding of the ILI map.
I'll start and ask Dr. Brissy to continue. Because ILI looks at the proportion of office visits that are for an influenza-like illness, and because people often don't go to the doctor's office for routine checkups during the holiday season, so the number of visits may be down, you can see just unpredictable changes in the proportion of ILI in doctor visits. Generally, over a holiday season, people who come in tend to have a different pattern of illness and perhaps have a larger proportion of serious illness than those who don't. Dr. Brissy?
No, that's exactly right. I would say the same. I think, Mike, if you look back at the previous year's data, you do see these little rises and notches around the same weeks in previous years. The question about vaccination, I think that we don't have specific data about where vaccine is and who has which vaccine. I guess the message is that a lot of the vaccine in the United States when we recommend it be given. And so by this time of year, a lot of the doctor's office is. And so it may be that you have to call a couple of places to find the vaccine when you go out, but it should be available for you.
Thank you.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. And this question comes from Jonathan Seri with Fox News. You may ask your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. If you could explain the vaccine effectiveness of 62%, help me to understand, does that mean a 62% chance you will not get the flu if you're exposed to the flu, or how do you come up with that figure?
Basically, that says that if you've gotten the flu vaccine, you're 62% less likely to need to go to your doctor to get treated for flu.
Thank you.
Question, Shirley.
Thank you. And this question comes from Deborah Kotz with Boston Globe. You may ask your question.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my question. I was wondering about the looking at that vaccine effectiveness numbers and wanted to break it down a little bit, which you guys did in your report, where you say that it's 55% effective against influenza A versus 70% effective against influenza B. And certainly here in Massachusetts, most of the flu that's circulating is the influenza A strain, which we've talked about, tends to be more severe, Burisma complications, and just wondering if the CDC is concerned at all about the fact that this vaccine, this particular one this year at least, seems to be far less effective against influenza A than B, and whether there's any drive to kind of create a better vaccine.
A couple of comments, and then Dr. Brzee may want to add. First, the numbers are relatively small. This is preliminary information, and the confidence intervals for those two strain-specific estimates overlap. So the data that's presented is not enough to say that there's a real difference in the effectiveness against the two different strains. But yes, we definitely are working hard, as is NIH, as are the vaccine manufacturers, to try to come up with a better vaccine. Childhood vaccines routinely get well over 90% vaccine efficacy, and that's what we'd like to see. Many of the vaccines last longer than a year and cover a wider variety of the subtypes of an organism. So the flu vaccine is far from perfect. That's why you have to get revaccinated each year. That's why we have to reformulate the vaccine each year. So we wish we would have a vaccine that was long-lasting and universal against flu, but that's a ways off. And today, still, the flu vaccine is by far the best prevention we have. Dr. Brzee, do you want to mention anything more about the strains?
No, nothing to add. I think that was exactly the explanation I was going to give. Perfect.
I just ask one quick follow-up. You say it's a little less effective in people who have underlying conditions. Can you name a few of those conditions?
That would include the frail elderly, people who may have had cancer chemotherapy, people who may have immune systems that are weakened or be on medications that would weaken their immune system, including people who are on long-term oral steroid treatment for conditions that require that. So it's kind of the opposite of what we would wish. The people who are most susceptible to severe influenza are also less likely to get the benefit that others get from the vaccine. Again, Dr. Brzee, anything to add?
No, not a bit. I think that's exactly right. And I would say that because these groups do have very high rates of complications and severe diseases, like the elderly, like very young children, or people with immune-compromising conditions, although the vaccine may work less well in some of those people, it's clearly the best tool to give. And the disease burden in those groups are so substantial that even a modest effect compared to a young, healthy person is a tremendous public health importance.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alice Park with Time Magazine. Let me ask your question.
Yes, good morning. Wanted to address the 62% effectiveness number. Can you give us some perspective as to how this compares to other years? And it seems like it's very close to that sort of just threshold of being barely sort of how you define effective. And second question relates to the kind of pattern we're seeing with the cases, with so many cases, the volume of cases, and coming on so quickly. Does that raise any concerns about the virus sort of being more likely to mutate and, you know, given this relatively low effectiveness rate, kind of mutate out of, you know, to be quote-unquote resistant to the vaccine and cause more problems further down the road?
No, we don't expect to see any changes in the flu vaccine during this season. We'll have to track the patterns around the world to see what's most likely to happen in the next flu season. And, you know, you can say 62% is certainly far less than we wish it would be, but it's a glass 62% full or a 62% reduction in the number of people who would be going to doctor's offices if they hadn't been vaccinated. So it's certainly well worth the effort. I get vaccinated, my family gets vaccinated, and we all hope we'll be able in a few years to have a better vaccine. In terms of the trends, it does vary in terms of how well the vaccine is matched to the circulating strains. Sometimes we don't have a good match, and the vaccine effectiveness can be quite low because we're vaccinating against the strains that aren't circulating. Dr. Brzee, can you comment further about the historical perspective on vaccine effectiveness?
Yeah, sure. The we would say that 62% effectiveness of a vaccine in a population that's a broad population that includes both healthy people and a lot of elderly and sick people is what we'd expect from influenza vaccine in a year in which the circulating strains look like the strains that were included in the vaccine. And if you look back over the last few years of the studies that CDC has done, this is in line with what we found, and also in line with some recent reviews of vaccine trials that have been done over the last several years. And so I think that the 62%, we'd love it to be better, but we think it is actually a substantial a public health benefit for the population.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. And this question comes from Stephanie Armour with Bloomberg News. You may ask your question.
Great. Thanks very much. I have two questions for you. One, I'm trying to get some information on all the deaths so far this year compared to the previous season. And my other question from the influenza, my other question is when you talk about outpatient visits and the 4.3% above the national baseline of 2.2%, can you explain what the national baseline refers to?
Dr. Bracy?
Sure, happy to. First, the deaths. We don't count, except for pediatric deaths, which we do count in our reportable diseases to the CDC, we don't, on a weekly basis during the season, estimate the total number of deaths that occur in the population. We do have signals of the numbers of deaths, like the 122 cities deaths system that you might be aware of. And so it won't be till after the season that we'll have a feel for how many deaths occurred because of the influenza circulation in the winter. But we do run models on that and know that from year to year it varies quite a bit, but really is in the thousands to tens of thousands of deaths each year. And so I can't answer it right now, but hopefully we'll be able to answer it in just a little while after the season. But the second question was, the baseline. I apologize. The baseline is a baseline that's calculated from the last 3 years of data prior to this year, taking the low months from influenza, say the summer months of influenza, looking at the proportion of patients who come in during those months that have influenza-like illness compared to the total number of people that come to clinic, and then taking that and taking what we call two standard deviations above that. And so basically what it's meant to represent is during the low season, what do we see, and if we elevate that, what line would we assume that the disease occurring above that line is attributable to influenza? And so what we're saying now is above threshold is that when those lines, when those dots get above the epidemic threshold, either for the nation or for a region, we think that influenza disease has started, and they tend to correlate quite well with influenza virus circulation in the community.
Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Erica Edwards with NBC News. You may ask your question.
Hey there. I was wondering if you could talk more about the specific kinds of strains we're seeing and whether they're included in the vaccine, and specifically a reported fourth strain that's popped up and maybe not included in the vaccine.
Sure. About 90% of all of the strains circulating are included in the vaccine. In fact, they're the three most common strains, and the current vaccines have only space for three strains. So the pick of vaccine strains was as good as it could have been this year. The other close to 10% are a second influenza B. And within a year or two, we do expect manufacturers to have on the market vaccines that have space for four different vaccines, including two influenza Bs. So that's the explanation of that. Dr. Bracy, anything to add?
No, sir. That's great.
If I could ask a quick follow-up, is there any evidence that that particular strain is more severe or less severe or about the same as the flu we're seeing?
Dr. Bracy?
No, there's not. The two B strains that you're talking, I think the fourth strain you're talking about is the B that is of a lineage, a genetic lineage. It's not included in the vaccine. There's no evidence that strain is more or less severe than the other strains.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mary Helen Campa with CBS Network News. See me ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You mentioned that the area of the country that's relatively lower with the flu numbers is the far west. Can you talk a little bit more about that, maybe provide some numbers? And is there anything that, that quantifies the spread west other than, you know, the usual?
I'll begin. I'll turn it over to Dr. Bracy, and then I'm going to have to sign off the call. Generally, we do see flu essentially roll across the country as it rolls across the globe. So it's not unexpected to see it start in the south, southeast, and then spread gradually to the west. That would be a common pattern. So, again, you can't predict. Sometimes it skips areas of the country for reasons that we don't fully understand. I do want to just reiterate a couple of messages before I turn it over to Dr. Bracy, because I do have to drop off the call now. We're in flu season. Most of the country has seen or is seeing a lot of flu. This may continue for a few more weeks. We don't yet know whether we are over the peak. It does appear that in some of the south and southeast, we're seeing that we are past the peak and declines in cases. But only the next couple of weeks will make that trend clear. You can't really make a line with 2 points. You need multiple points to see where that line is going, particularly when you have the holiday season, which can sometimes skew some of the data. The vaccine effectiveness is what we're releasing early this season because we have more flu earlier this season, so we're able to make the estimate. It's in line with what we expect. It shows that the flu vaccine can prevent most cases of flu, but it's far from perfect. It's still the best thing that you can do to protect yourself. There's still flu vaccine out there if you want to get vaccinated. Better late than never. But if you get flu-like symptoms and you're either very ill or you have underlying illness that may make you more susceptible to being very ill, then by all means see your doctor, because treatment with antivirals, especially in the first 48 hours after you become ill, can really help you avoid serious illness or hospitalization or even death. So, Dr. Bracy, if you could follow up with this question. Thanks to everyone for being involved, and I'll have to drop off at this point.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I'll just reiterate what Dr. Frieden just said, which I think is important, is that the geographic spread of flu is unpredictable, and each year we see intense flu activity in some parts of the countries while other parts of the countries have less flu, and it changes over time. And so the fact that the West Coast is experiencing a little less flu than other parts of the country is not too surprising. And so I suspect that over the next couple of weeks, the West Coast will have more flu than they do now, and some of the other areas will have less.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Next question comes from Dan Childs with ABC News. You may ask your question.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for taking my call. the question that I had was, we're hearing about, as you say, spot shortages of flu vaccine around the country. Is there any suggestion that there might be a shortage of Tamiflu?
It's a good question, thanks. There have been some issues with finding, in some places occasionally, issues in finding the suspension, the pediatric formulation that's a liquid. Those are spot shortages as well, and the company's working hard along with FDA to remedy that. They have issued guidelines now, and it's available on the FDA website and accessible through the CDC website, guidelines for taking the 75-milligram tablets, which is the strength you give adults, and creating a pediatric formulation with that. And so I think there are some things we can do, despite if you can't find the pediatric formulation, you can reconstitute it, your pharmacist can reconstitute it from the adult-sized pills as well.
Okay, fantastic. So just to clarify, there's no shortage in the adult pills. It's just the pediatric liquid formulation?
That's what we've heard, yes. I think that the FDA is monitoring this closely and probably has the most recent data.
Next question, Shirley.
Our next question comes from Robert Lovis with Medscape Medical News. You may ask your question.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I don't want to beat a dead horse further, but I guess I want to at least clarify one point, and then I have a follow-up question on something else. Most people in the country see a more harsh flu season. They learn that the vaccine effectiveness is only 62%, and they would say, aha, if we had a better vaccine, we wouldn't have such a severe a season. What would you say to those people who would look at a so-so vaccine as the explanation for why, for instance, we have the public health emergency in Boston. Second question, apparently the pandemic virus is a very minor player in this year's season. What do you conclude from that?
I'll take the second question first, because I think that's an interesting question. We're not seeing much of the 2009 H1 virus yet so far this year, though it should be said that Europe and other places in the world are. And so that virus continues to circulate in the world. We know that influenza viruses in a given country, in a given city, in a given region will vary from year to year and in unpredictable ways. And so I'd say we are seeing less of that virus now, but it doesn't mean that we'll see less of it all during the season, and it certainly doesn't mean it's gone from it's vanished. For the other question, I think that I would say that we all want a better vaccine. If we had to draw up a vaccine, we would design a vaccine with 100% effectiveness. And if everyone got vaccinated with that vaccine, we'd certainly see less disease. That said, a vaccine against a disease like flu, which causes hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations and tens of thousands of deaths each year, that reduces the chance of you having one of those outcomes by 60, 50, 70%, we think is a really substantial contribution to public health in the country. We'd love a better vaccine. This is by far the best tool we can get that we have to prevent what we think is a substantial public health threat.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Donald McNeil with the New York Times. You may ask your question.
Thank you. I was hoping Tom Frieden to be here to handle this, but can you talk about the other viruses that are circulating? Lots of people are sick. Clearly not everybody has the flu this year. They have a whole constellation of symptoms. Other things are going on. Can you just discuss
Thanks,
that?
Thanks for the question. This is Joe. I'll try to answer this question. We are seeing an early flu year, as we've talked about, but this time of year we also see lots of other respiratory viruses like respiratory syncytial virus and metapneumovirus and parainfluenza virus. And those are circulating now, too. We're also seeing norovirus, which causes vomiting and diarrhea. And so I think a lot of the calls that we've gotten anecdotally and a lot of the news reports that talk about clinics being very busy and ERs being very busy may in part be due to a confluence of a lot of these wintertime viruses that are occurring about the same time in some communities.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Elizabeth Weiss with USA Today. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had two questions. One that I believe it was in the MMWR that about 37% of Americans had been immunized against the flu this year. Is that high or low? And then what could we be doing to create a more effective influenza vaccine? Are there things that we should be looking towards that perhaps Europe's doing that we're not?
Yeah, thanks for the questions. And so, you're right. Right, the last look for the vaccine coverage surveys we did showed that about 37% of Americans had been vaccinated by mid-November or so. And that's about on track with what we saw last year at that time. We have seen a lot of vaccination happening in the last couple of weeks, and so I don't know where we'll end up this year, but hopefully we'll end up much higher than 37% and close to 50%. We would like, of course, that every American gets vaccinated that's eligible for vaccination with flu, and so the fact that we're seeing as good vaccine coverage as last year, and by historical standards, very good vaccine coverage in the last couple of years, we'd like it to be much higher because still around half of Americans don't get vaccinated for flu each year, and we think that's too many. The second question is, how do we make better vaccines, and are other people making better vaccines than we are? That's a good question, too. We'd like better vaccines, and in fact, there's lots of research going on towards improving influenza vaccines by novel approaches like looking at different proteins on the surface of the vaccine or different areas of the protein on the surface of the vaccine. The goal clearly is to find a vaccine against influenza that you don't have to give every year, that works better and can work for more people. And I think there's hundreds of labs around the world and hundreds of field sites around the world that are actively studying this area. So hopefully in the next several years, we will get those greater vaccines. In the meantime, we have better and better vaccines every year. Dr. Frieden mentioned the fact that we have four-valent or quadrivalent vaccines on the horizon. We'll be here next year. We have vaccines made in cell culture versus eggs. We have vaccines that are injectable and some that are sprays and through the nose. And so we're making it easier and easier, I hope, to get the vaccine because there's more choices to get the vaccine. And now, as you say, the challenge is to make the vaccine better.
Next question, please.
Thank you. And this question comes from Lena Sun with Washington Post. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you very much. I had a couple of questions. One, do you have updated numbers on how many people have actually been vaccinated? I know that the most recent number I've seen was from back in November, 112 million. That's one. The second question is, this is going back to the vaccine effectiveness, I put it in context, how does the 62% this year compare to the last couple of years? And three, I know it's very complicated as to the why, but I was wondering if you could take a brief stab at explaining for the lay reader why it's so hard to get an effective flu vaccine when, you know, childhood vaccines are, you know, at like 90% and higher.
Yeah, thanks very much, Lena. So if I tracked your questions correctly, let me ask the first one, which is coverage. The latest coverage, the true coverage survey numbers we have are the ones I mentioned for mid-November. We do track the doses distributed in the United States, which as of January 4th was 128 million, and we'll track that in an ongoing way. The next coverage numbers will be available in March of the year, and that will really be get us to where towards the final numbers for the year. The second question is, how does the VE compare with previous years? It compares about the same. I think if we've looked at the last several years, our VE numbers are variable, like everything with flu. Last year was in the 50s. I think it was in the mid-50s. Some years we get lower, some years we get a little higher. And if you look back and try to summarize all the VE studies, all the vaccine effectiveness studies, sorry, that have been done over the last 20 years, the 50 to 70% range is a reasonable range to vaccines with. Flu vaccines are tough, as you say, and if I had the perfect answer of how to make a better flu vaccine, I'd probably get a Nobel Prize. But flu vaccines are tough, and one of the problems is that the flu virus changes all the time, number one. And because it mutates so often, we have to keep up with the vaccine really often. The second thing is that the antibodies that we get when we get the flu vaccine go away. And so we get a nice rise of antibodies that will take us through the flu season but tend to decline towards the end of the flu season. And so another reason you have to be revaccinated every year. But I think just the nature of flu viruses, the fact that they're always changing, and the complexity of our immune response to it makes these viruses very difficult to develop the 100% effective vaccine that we're looking for.
All right, next question, please. We've got time for maybe two or three more questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Timothy Martin with Wall Street Journal. You may ask your question.
Hi. In the MMWR, there was a mention that approximately 60% has been the number of the estimated effectiveness of these vaccinations from randomized clinical trials. Is that for this year's flu shot? And if not, if it's looking at previous flu shots, can you tell me what's the rough time frame with which those trials were conducted? And the second question I have is, have you guys compared the flu season this year, which arrived earlier than in recent memory, versus, say, the last time the flu came this early, and if there's anything different as we, you know, head into January and February? Thank you.
So I think the number you're referring to of the randomized controlled trials was a number that we referenced from a recent review or meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials done recently and published, I think, last year. Those studies were done over probably a couple of decades. I'll have to look it up. But substantially, the controlled trials aren't done this year. What we reported this year is what we call observational trials, and observational trials are studies that we do that are not randomized. And so what we do is we go to a hospital or go to a clinic, we look for disease, and then we measure how many of those people have been vaccinated, compare them to people who don't have the disease, and look for vaccination rates, and then compare those two, sort of a ratio. Randomized controlled trials are done, and they're excellent ways to measure the best effect of a vaccine. The observational trials you think about as a way to measure the true effect of a vaccine when given in a vaccination program to a program. Your second question was about how does this season compare with previous early years. The best comparator year is probably the 2003-2004 year, which was also an early year. In fact, that year was much earlier than this year, and we had peak disease in November and December that year. That year was also an H3N2 predominant year, and that year was also, in the end, associated with a lot of mortality and a lot of pediatric mortality as well. I don't know how this year will compare in terms of severity or in terms of length or in terms of when the peak is to that year yet, but we'll know in a few months.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rachel Rettner with MyHealthNewsDaily.com. You may ask your question.
Thank you for taking my question. You mentioned that the percentage of deaths attributed to pneumonia and influenza is above epidemic thresholds. And I was wondering if you could explain what we mean by above epidemic thresholds. Does that mean that we're seeing more deaths than usual?
That's a good question. We measure those deaths according to what we call a regression model. And what we do is we map over many years the rise and fall of influenza by season, so in the rise and fall of all deaths by season. And what we then construct is a model, a statistical model, to allow us to know when we think flu is circulating or when we think flu is resulting in the death that we're looking at. One way to do that is to create these models that has a baseline. And if you look at that graph, you see a lower solid line that kind of goes up and down over the years. And then you create a threshold, and the threshold in this case is about 1.8 standard deviations above the baseline. So the baseline is, if you had to draw sort of an average of all the deaths that occur over the year, that's the baseline. The threshold's above that. And what we found out is that when the PNI, the pneumonia and influenza deaths, exceed that baseline or exceed the epidemic threshold, that's when flu tends to circulate, and we can start to think that flu is associated with the deaths that exceed that threshold. And so basically think about it as a way to know when the timing of severe disease is in the United States.
Hey, Shirley, we'll make this our last question, please.
And our last question then comes from Bob Rose with SIDREP News. You may ask your question.
Thank you. I've often heard it said that if you get vaccinated but you still get the flu, you may get a less severe case. That vaccine may still provide some protection from severe illness. Do you have any sense whether that's happening this year?
I think that's a good question, and there are some data to indicate that getting the vaccine gives you could give you a milder disease if you do get infected. The data are very sparse, though. I think it makes sense to me that that's true, and it might explain why there's lots of disease so far, at least, and less severe disease. But I think the proof is going to be towards the end of the season about how much disease we see.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us. This concludes our call, and should you have follow-up questions or want an interview with Dr. Brzee or another subject matter expert, please call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. There will be a transcript available of this telebriefing by later on this afternoon. So thank you for joining us, and we will keep you updated as the flu season unfolds. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time.